previously on ESPN's 30 for 30.
The first practice, he gets us all together. He said, boys, I've got some good news and I've got some bad news. The good news is you give me 3 years, we're going to the Super Bowl. The bad news is half of you ain't gonna be here to see it.
We were Shaq and Kobe before Shaq and Kobe.
We were young, we were having so much fun, and we were winning.
Yes!
What more could you want?
I saw championships. That's all I saw.
It was this meteor, and here it was coming.
The Magic say, why not us? Why not now?
And then all of a sudden, it just vanished.
The answer to the question everybody wants to know. LeBron, what's your decision?
In this fall, man, this is very tough. In this fall, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach and join the Miami Heat.
Miami Heat. That was the conclusion you woke up with this morning.
That was the conclusion I woke up with this morning.
On Saturday, May 14th, ESPN debuted its 82nd episode of its critically acclaimed 30 for 30 series. It was the ninth episode of the third volume. Counting 30 for 30 shorts and soccer stories, the series has seen a staggering 140 total episodes. The idea for 30 for 30 began with ESPN.com columnist and Grantland.com founder Bill Simmons, and a desire to chronicle 30 stories beginning during 1979, the founding year of ESPN. After tremendous success early on, the series is still going strong after 5 years, and has shown no real signs of slowing anytime soon, even with Simmons' departure from ESPN and the end of Grantland in early 2016. My name is River City Clement, and I am your host, and this is Episode 8 of Season 3 here at the Baker's Dozen Podcast. 2 weeks ago, Episode 6 of Season 3 saw us rank our 13 favorite sports movies of all time. From Varsity Blues to White Man Can't Jump to Field of Dreams to Rocky, my 13 favorite, as well as some talk on those deemed overrated and those that just missed the list. They were all described and detailed for you, the listener. And that got me thinking. 30 for 30 has become a pinnacle documentary series in the lexicon of sports and related pop culture. In fact, it's a great pairing with ESPN's E60 series for education on key sports and pop culture-related stories from the past and present. 30 for 30 has covered a variety of topics, both those I was familiar with and those that were quite new or even completely foreign to me. Often, a 30 for 30 episode is the highlight of my sports viewing calendar, and while all of them haven't been winners, and to be honest, there have been a few stinkers, the vast majority of them have both been informative and entertaining. Falling short is definitely the exception to the 30 for 30 rule of stellar filmmaking. So I decided to rank my 13 favorite episodes of this extensive series, my absolute favorites thus far. Looking at a simple rubric, I graded them and eventually ranked them based on their topics, the direction and presentation of the documentary, their perspective and stance or multiple stances, their storytelling model, and those directly involved in making the actual documentary, and those who helped to deliver the content. Of the 80 plus episodes, and I've seen at least 90% of them, I was able to work my way down to 13, and then rank them from 13 all the way up to the number one spot, which admittedly was a clear-cut favorite of mine. Don't worry, as I'll be sure to note the most notable exceptions, whether those I deemed overrated or those that just missed the cut from my top 13. And if you're a fan of the series, whether rampant or occasional, I'll be curious to see if any of your favorites made my list. And that gives you a perfect reason to reach out to us via social media. Whether Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or email, we always appreciate hearing from you, the listeners. We heard a lot of feedback after our movie post, and we hope for more of the same with this episode. Getting in touch with us, it's incredibly easy, as all of our social media information and contact is available on the description or info for this episode. And if you search Baker's Dozen Podcast, something tells me you'll find us, irregardless of the big three social media giants. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes, the podcast app, or just bookmark our page at podomatic.com. A Wi-Fi connection and you're good to go. And you can further link up with us and get automatic downloads almost instantly after they drop. You search Baker's Dozen Podcast or my name, River City Clement, River City being one word, you'll find us online, trust me. But for right now, let's dive straight into the rankings and get this episode going. No guests this week, just yours truly. So without further ado, let's roll. Well, maybe a little ado. Before I get started with the top 13 itself, there are two episodes that you certainly won't find anywhere near the top rankings on my list. And I'll be the first to admit that some episodes, the topic just doesn't interest me. There are some that I just avoid or watch a few minutes or a couple segments of and pass on. Only natural for such an all-encompassing series, no matter how stellar it is, with such an extensive library. Look, not everyone is going to be in my wheelhouse. Not everyone's going to be great. But there are two real disappointments on topics I was ecstatic about that often come to my mind first when analyzing the whole library of ESPN's 30 for 30.
On September 7th, 1996, there was more bloodshed outside of the ring than inside of it. Tupac was more than just an MC. Just like Tyson was more than an athlete. September 7th, 1996, it was supposed to be just another night in Vegas.
One Night in Vegas, a sort of rap poetry-based look at the infamous night Tupac Shakur was shot on the Las Vegas Strip, the same night of a Mike Tyson fight. Look, it tried at its best to deliver its message, but I thought it felt short, in fact, quite short, in fact. Its delivery seemed jumpy and often forced. It tried to be a little too intense at times. Look, that was too long of a documentary or piece of film for that type of presentation. The graphics just didn't flow properly. I think they missed out on a great story, and I turned it off 20 or 30 minutes into it. And honestly, I'm surprised I lasted that long.
NBC's now breaking the story that Tonya Harding...
Authorities are focusing their attention on Tonya Harding.
A plot designed to steal Olympic gold.
I mean, the rumors were just flying immediately. Wouldn't it be wild if Tonya had something to do with this?
There had never been in the history of sports anything like this.
Second up is one that's going to surprise a lot of you, and it was The Price of Gold. I thought it was really underwhelming. It was a documentary focusing on the controversy around figure skaters Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan during the 1994 Winter Olympics. Look, this is a great story. It's like Shakespearean tragedy. But without Kerrigan, who opted for an NBC special that aired during the Olympics, and she helped with that coverage, you know, with 50% of the story gone, things aren't what they should be. You know, Harding... she was a naive maniac, she was a mess, and that made for good TV, but 50% of the story missing, it's just too much, and I'll give you an example of when it's okay. The 30 for 30 episode of the Fab Five, which you're going to hear about shortly, it survived without Chris Webber, even though that was a big part of the story, because of so many other names, egos, personalities, and perspectives to tell on the story. Look, Fab Five could survive without Webber when it comes to the 30 for 30. The Price of Gold desperately needed Nancy Kerrigan, not just to be very good, but potentially outstanding and maybe the best one in this series. I finished the episode, but I found it far more underwhelming. I didn't want to just hear the story from Kerrigan's perspective through media coverage and, you know, like coaches and outside perspectives, even from her inner circle. So my early expectations, they were definitely not met. But enough of the disappointments, let's get to the top 13, let's start with number 13, and let's see if your favorite or favorites made the list or didn't make it.
Let them go first time, and Ben Johnson got a brilliant start. It's Johnson away, it's clear.
They can't get it, no!
And Lewis is not going to catch it. Johnson wins it. Lewis second, Christie third, and the world record has gone again.
And that is the greatest 100 meters the world has ever seen.
Number 13, 9.79, asterisk. Episode 2 of Volume 2. A profile of the men's 100 meter final at the 1988 Summer Olympics, and the lives of 8 men who participated, including Canadian phenom and, now scandalized, sprinter Ben Johnson, whose world record run of 9.79 seconds was scrubbed after he tested positive for anabolic steroids, and U.S. sprinter Carl Lewis was awarded the gold medal after Johnson's disqualification. Olympics, a doping scandal, the fastest man alive, animosity and rivalry that exists still to this day, controversy, cheating, and cover-ups that still all haven't been solved. This was a stellar episode that exposed the steroid controversy long before it ever chased a home run record or donned a yellow jacket.
The greatest show on earth.
This team lived for the stage.
They wanted the show. We're going to put on a show for you. That's one thing we're going to do for you.
The bigger the stage, the bigger we played.
Most schools never win one national championship, and we had a chance to just win them all.
Even the marvelous Bobby Bowden couldn't beat the Canes on a regular basis, and he knows that.
We just refuse to lose.
It's called swagger. If you don't like us dancing, then don't let us get in the end zone.
We looked at it as going to somebody's backyard and turning a garbage can over and walking out the front door. And that was our attitude. We didn't fear anyone.
We set a tone for not just sports, but for a culture. I mean, it was all edgy, from the way the city was, to how the music was, to the way we played. We were the first to do this stuff. So usually when you're the first something, you're not embraced.
It didn't matter to us. It's about winning football games. And that's all that matters. You can call us whatever you want to call us, but get to know the name is C-A-N-E-S.
Number 12, The U and The U Part 2. Episode 7 of Volume 1 and Episode 26 of Volume 2. The racial and cultural evolution of Miami during the 1980s as represented within the University of Miami football team, and a sequel that really made one great documentary to The U that profiles the Miami Hurricanes program and its rise from scandal and calls for the school to drop the sport to a national championship, only to see new controversy after the booster, Nevin Shapiro, is revealed to have given improper benefits to the program. Luther Campbell and the 2 Live crew, the 7th Floor crew. Camo fatigues getting off the plane, 6 national titles. 5 national titles. Jimmy Johnson's hair. You know by the letter itself. It's the U. This is the story of the rise and fall of the University of Miami's football program. From dormant, non-existent program, to multiple national championships, to nearly the death penalty, and back all again. This episode has more personalities, egos, and eccentric attitudes than you could ask for. Heck, Michael Irvin almost takes care of that himself, actually. But whether it's the camo fatigues, the still controversial late pass interference call, the impact of boosters, celebrities, rappers, the Miami community, the Orange Bowl, or the 5, sorry it's not 6, national titles, the U elicits emotions and reactions, polarizing audiences abound. Love them or hate them, you are watching.
28 seconds, the crowd going insane. Carloman shooting it into the American end again. Morrow is back there. Now Johnson, 19 seconds. Johnson over to Ramsey. The Legionov gets checked by Ramsey. McClanahan is there. The puck is still loose. 11 seconds. You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes! Unbelievable.
Number 11 of Miracles and Men. Episode 27 of Volume 2. An exploration of the miracle on ice from the point of view of the defeated Soviet Union team. Do you believe in miracles? The Cold War and sports crossover. Unbridled dominance loses to optimistic youth. A story most have never heard from the perspective many never cared about until recently. We've seen the story of the U.S. perspective of the miracle on ice most of our lives. It's the single greatest U.S. moment in sports history, bar none. And now, we get the alternate perspective. Honest and open, the Cold War barriers are finally let down, and the truth, from the losing perspective, from the former enemy, is finally told. It's gripping, poignant, and raw with emotion. Frankly, it's stellar.
A day of firsts.
Waited 54 years for this.
A day of lasts.
And Arnold Palmer, his last round of golf in the U.S. Open.
Triumphs.
Go Knicks!
And tragedy.
Mr. Simpson is a fugitive of justice right now.
A day that the modern world changed.
Can't make this. Don't do this. Don't do it, OJ.
Number 10, June 17th, 1994. The 15th episode of Volume 1. Quick cut archival footage captures the various U.S. June 17th sporting events in question and the emotions they generated, including but not limited to the opening of the World Cup soccer tournament on U.S. soil, the Knicks-Rockets battle in the NBA Finals, Arnold Palmer's last round in the U.S. Open, and the New York Rangers Stanley Cup victory celebration, all of which were overshadowed by O.J. Simpson's infamous run from the police. A New York Rangers Cup victory. Arnie's Army makes the charge one last time at the U.S. Open. A World Cup kicks off on U.S. soil. The New York Knicks in New York City playing towards an NBA title. All on the same day, no less. And yet, it was the infamous Ford Bronco chase with O.J. Simpson, the former football hero and legend, who was recently charged with a double homicide involving his ex-wife, which became the true story that would last from June 17, 1994. Before American Crime Story, even before the upcoming five-part O.J. Made in America series produced by 30 for 30, we all witnessed an infamous day in not just sports history, but American pop culture and media history. And it unfolded before our eyes with a brilliant series of selected clips, police calls, and interviews in this 30 for 30 gem. I remember the day, June 17, 1994, all too well, even if I was only 11. It was a gripping return watching this episode to a day many of us will never forget, but for all the wrong reasons.
Here they go, the Wolverines!
From the producers of 30 for 30.
Who are these five basketball player Muhammad Ali's?
We go shop to wear!
Long shorts, black socks, black shoes. Oh! We were bigger than the score of the game.
In 1991, five Michigan freshmen ignited a basketball revolution.
Number 9, the Fab Five. Episode 1 of Volume 2. The story of the 1991 Michigan men's basketball recruiting class, known as the Fab Five, one of whom, Chris Webber, was later involved in a notorious play-for-pay scandal. Five fabulous freshmen starting on one team. Jalen Rose saying anything on a microphone. The perception of both Michigan and Duke in the early 90s. The timeout call when there were no timeouts. The scandals that followed, the banners that were taken down. First off, if Chris Webber had agreed to be part of this, this easily would be fighting for the top spot. But between Ray Jackson, Jimmy King, Juwan Howard, Steve Fisher, and of course, the aforementioned Jalen Rose, you still earn the ninth spot on my list easily. It's an episode dripping with reality. Love them or hate them, the Fab Five were college basketball in the early 90s. Entertaining as hell. In just 2 years, they legitimately changed college basketball forever. And nobody, even the biggest of haters, can deny that.
Everyone was saying, who's Pete Carroll?
Southern California turned to Carroll late this afternoon, naming him as their new head football coach. Carroll takes over one of the legendary programs in college football despite being out of college football for 17 years.
He's never done anything. He's never really coached college football.
He has never been a head coach in college, and his last college job was at University of Pacific 17 years ago.
He got fired by two pro teams.
I think even Pete Carroll recognizes this is his last game as a head coach here.
Trojan War, Episode 1 of Volume 3, the most recent entry on this list. A profile of the rise and fall of USC Trojans football during Pete Carroll's coaching tenure in the 2000s. Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, and Pete Carroll. Vince Young and Mack Brown. The legendary 2005 Rose Bowl BCS title game. Celebrities galore and Los Angeles obsession with fame. Controversy and a lost Heisman Trophy. USC football in the 2000s was as polarizing as it got. The 2005 Rose Bowl game between SC and the Texas Longhorns was arguably the greatest college football game of this or any generation. And it all unfolds in front of our eyes a second time, with the legacy of USC football in the 2000s forever in question. So now, it's so nice we can enjoy it twice.
a quick pass to half court and call a quick timeout so they can get in better shooting range.
There's the pass to Leitner. Puts it up. Yes!
Number 7. I Hate Christian Leitner. Episode 28 of Volume 2. A look at the life and the basketball career of Christian Leitner, and the intense dislike some fans still harbor for the former Duke University and NBA star, and Duke University itself. Hating someone from Duke. Hating Christian Leitner. The story of the shot versus Kentucky. Leitner autographing team pictures by signing over Bobby Hurley's face. Learning the real story of Christian Leitner, the man and the player. Most of us hate Duke. A lot. A whole lot. But those who don't love everything about them. The names and legacies, they haven't been forgotten. The irritants. The stars. Battier. JJ. Grayson. Wojo. Cherokee. Paulus. Sheldon. Shavlik. Shire. Singler. Rivers. Dawkins. Capel. Billis. Ferry. Hurley. And of course, Christian Leitner. Christian Leitner takes the cake, and then some. From stepping on heads, to whining to refs, to dominating title games, to the rise of Coach K and the flop. Hating Leitner and hating Duke University is as easy as it gets for most college basketball fans. And yet, in this 30 for 30, we learned both sides of the story. And perhaps, just a little, we don't hate Leitner and Duke as much as we used to. Or maybe, we hate them even more.
And Reggie Miller has accounted for 10 of the 12 Indiana points here in the fourth quarter. Reggie Miller giving the choke sign to Spike Lee. Spike is appealing to the official Dan Crawford. I don't think that Spike realizes he's not in the game. It does not matter what Reggie does in the direction of Spike Lee. He wants a taunting foul called.
Number 6, Trey Fernandez will be happy to hear this. Winning Time, Reggie Miller versus the New York Knicks. Episode 8 of Volume 1, the impact of the rivalry with Indiana Pacers superstar Reggie Miller with the New York Knicks in the 1990s, specifically focusing on the Pacers-Knicks battles in 1994 and 1995 in the playoffs, and Miller's interactions with Knicks superfan and filmmaker Spike Lee. Reggie and Spike, the shove and the three. Threes, threes, threes. The choke gesture. Pacers still lost that series, folks. Names like the Dunking Dutchman, Oak, and Anthony Mason. The best rivalry in basketball in the 90s. As a Knicks fan, you knew this would be up here. Knicks haters or Miller lovers, they probably wanted even higher. Public enemy number one after the retirement of MJ for Knicks Nation was Reggie Miller. The second best ball player in his only family, mind you. The man who took on the city, Spike Lee, and the mecca of basketball. I still want to throw things at the screen when he puts up the choke sign, after the shove, and the third three. After all those points in mere seconds, the legacy lives on for years. I still wish he played the Knicks in every playoff series. That'd be a dream.
Just get sticky, I react quickly. Bust mine off till the boys come get me. Take it, exploit me, man.
Allen Iverson may be the most controversial basketball player of our time. I first heard about him from my dad, who marveled at the scrawny high school kid's exploits on the football field and the court.
He was one of our most gifted.
Iverson for three. Yes!
He took on a golden child image.
He was cocky. That's what you love.
Walk in the hardware store, pick up the smallest nail in there, and try to bend it. Can't do it. It's tough. That's Allen Iverson.
For this transcendent high school athlete, everything changed on Valentine's Day, 1993.
Number 5, some Virginia flavor. No crossover. Trial of Allen Iverson. Episode 10 of Volume 1. The story of the 1993 trial of Hampton, Virginia high school phenom Allen Iverson, convicted for his role in a racially tinged melee at a bowling alley, and its impact on both the community and on Iverson's life. Hoop Dreams is acclaimed director in Hampton's own Steve James, AI, the single toughest athlete in NBA history. The bowling alley brawl and conspiracy theories galore. a community, its golden sun, and his dramatic rise and fall. Allen Iverson is as polarizing a figure in every avenue of life he's been a part of as anyone else I can think of. From his hometown rise to fame in Hampton to his career with the 76ers, Iverson evokes a reaction out of everyone. And it all started long before his lost senior season, one he spent incarcerated less than a year after state titles in football and basketball for Bethel High School. It's a story more than the basketball court, more than Hampton, more than the bowling alley brawl. It's a story many of which we knew minor details. And now we keep wanting to know more and more about AI.
The Boston Celtics select Len Bias.
He couldn't be stopped.
So many experts were predicting tremendous success for him.
Number 4, Without Bias. Episode 5 of Volume 1. The death of basketball phenom Len Bias from a cocaine-induced heart attack, only 2 days after the Boston Celtics selected him as the second overall pick in the 1986 draft, and its impact on casual drug use, especially by the sports community. This 30 for 30 is at times dark and really depressing, but it's also a first-hand perspective, one we haven't seen, from those closest to Bias during his rise and fall as a potential sports legend. A dynamic, culture-shifting loss that put drugs and sports on the front page of more than just the sports section. It's raw with emotion and tugs at your heartstrings throughout. It's sports at its most vulnerable, at its realest moments, when a life is lost off the court, which had so much potential on it.
Maurice Corrett, touchdown!
It was two heroes from Youngstown. We had a chance to hook up with one another.
Maurice was about more than football, and we did talk a lot about his greater purpose.
They loved him, but they were quick to turn on him.
Number 3, Youngstown Boys. Episode 15 of Volume 2. The stories of two Ohio State football figures connected with Youngstown, Ohio. Running back Maurice Claret, a native, and head coach Jim Tressel, former head coach at Youngstown State University, exploring their football exploits at Ohio State, including a national championship in 2002, and their scandalous exits from the school. Maurice Claret speaks for himself. Jim Tressel speaks for himself. Youngstown, Ohio speaks for itself. The 2002 national title game speaks for itself. You're going to notice a theme for many of my favorite episodes of this series. They're often the most raw and the darkest episodes of the entire series. But that's reality. That's a side of sports many hide from, but I gravitate towards. And it doesn't get much grittier than Youngstown, Ohio, than Maurice Claret, who went from freshman phenom and national champion to redheaded stepchild, NFL draft bust, an incarcerated felon. Combine that with Jim Tressel, the coach and architect of the program, who won titles on two levels in Ohio, and then was banned from college football altogether for a time period. You see two perspectives, two painful stories, firsthand, told in their own words, witnessing the highest highs and the lowest lows possible.
With the war back home, basketball was no longer important. We just wanted peace. But the politicians and media used propaganda to fuel the hate. A spur-of-the-moment reaction 1 year earlier made me a hero in Serbia and a villain in Croatia. Any hope of saving my friendship with Dražen was gone.
I used to be very close with the Vlade Divac. We used to talk almost every second day, but right now...
Number 2, The Silver Medal, Once Brothers. Episode 25 of Volume 1. The story of Croatian Dražen Petrović and Serbian Vlade Divac. NBA players and Yugoslavian national teammates, and how upheaval in their homeland adversely and irretrievably affected their friendship. It's truly amazing what a sports documentary, just 90 minutes in length, can achieve. It's far more enjoyable than just about anything Hollywood's top writers could come up with. Untapped potential sometimes remains just that. Friendships and family bonds can be broken by conflict in one's country. Divac visiting Petrovic's parents? Come on. It was impossible not to have a dry eye at that moment. It's as gripping as 90 minutes of television can be, regardless of the top. Bravo, 30 for 30. Bravo.
Today in front of better than 90,000 at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, time has stopped. The United States looks for their first win in World Cup 94.
The Colombians touted as a pre-tournament favorite.
Colombians have some of the very best players that exist in the world today.
You know, the underdog against the powerhouse. Seems like if we win this game, they're going to make a movie out of it.
At this level, the psychological edge, I think, is probably more important than anything else.
Associated Press has reported that Colombia received a death threat at the team's hotel in Fullerton, California.
A dreadful mistake by Escobar.
Escobar accidentally scored a goal against his own team.
Captain of the Colombian team is
on FCSA investigation into the tragic death of his
drug baron, Pablo Escobar.
And of course, number one, and it really wasn't close for me, The Two Escobars, episode 16 of volume 1, the lives of soccer player Andres Escobar and drug lord Pablo Escobar, the intertwining of crime and soccer in their native Colombia, and the connections between the murders of both men. Simply put, this Academy Award level documentary is filmmaking at its best right here. It's the absolute best 30 for 30 has delivered, and I couldn't ask for anything better in the future if I'm being honest. You don't have to be a fan of Narcos or know the story in advance of either Escobar to become almost instantly entranced. It's a story of heartbreak, despair, and the power of evil. The Two Escobars is what ESPN's 30 for 30 does best. It grabs your attention and refuses to let it go. It intertwines drama with sports in a real-life story you have to know the end to. It's the best 2 hours ESPN has given us in years from any medium. And for that, I say to 30 for 30 and ESPN, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I bet more than a few of you are wondering, where was my favorite episode? Or even how a couple of your favorites or ones that you remembered missed my top 13. Well, I gotta admit, compiling this list was a lot harder than I thought it would be. If you don't believe me, try it yourself. And try, if possible, to eliminate bias. Whether it's a story about a team, athlete, city, or sport that you love, or one that you hate, try and consider the episode itself as a sports documentary, as filmmaking, and rank it accordingly. It's not as easy as you might think. Certainly wasn't for me. And what just missed the cut for me? There were quite a few stellar offerings from this series, honestly. Some that I thought on first, accord that we're going to make it. But I was dead wrong. And admittedly, there was an episode I avoided that, look, I simply couldn't remove bias from personally. And I'll call myself out on that before anyone else does, because that's only fair.
Ortiz in the deep right field. Back is Sheffield. We'll see you later tonight.
Ugh, I still want to puke just thinking about this story. Look, not the 30 for 30, I'm sure it was fine. I never saw it. But the comeback itself, and everything that surrounded it. The episode that I'm talking about was entitled 4 Days in October, and it chronicled the story of the Boston Red Sox and their unbelievable run to the 2004 World Series title, which included, of course, 4 straight wins against the New York Yankees, their hated rival, my childhood team, after the Sox fell down 0-3 in the series. Look, as a Yankees fan, maybe even more so these days, an avid Red Sox hater, and someone who's just incensed by Pink Hat Nation, the ridiculous pro sports Boston media, and the nauseating number of lifelong bandwagon Red Sox fans that showed up in those years, I refuse to this day to watch that. And am I bitter? You're damn right I am. Will I ever watch this? Well, in a word?
No.
But the episodes of this series that I watched and, just missed this list somewhat painfully, and trust me, there's more than a few, included Pony Excess, the story of SMU's football's many successes and even bigger scandals in the 1980s, Chasing Tyson, the story of Evander Holyfield's quest to boxing immortality, there was Legend of Jimmy the Greek, which chronicled the former CBS football personality and noted gambler, Little Big Men, the story of the Kirkland 1982 Little League World Series Championship team, The Best That Never Was, the rise and fall of superstar Oklahoma running back and college sensation Marcus Dupree, Unguarded, the story of Chris Herron, who fought drug addiction throughout his life, who was once a star college basketball recruit. Survive and Advance, the story of North Carolina State's improbable, if not seemingly impossible, run to the national title in 1983. There was no Moss, there's got to be some boxing in here. The rivalry between boxers Sugar Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran. Requiem for the Big East. Oh, I miss you. The rise and fall of the nation's premier basketball conference. There was Bad Boys, the story of the 1980s, you know, and early 90s Pistons, you know, that mini dynasty in between Bird and Magic and MJ that was born and raised straight out of Detroit. The day the series stopped, the story of the 1989 World Series on the Bay between the Oakland Athletics and San Francisco Giants with that infamous earthquake during one of the games. You've got Brian and the Boz, the many ups and downs of former Oklahoma linebacker Brian Bosworth. You've got Rand University, Randy Moss's, well, his many ups and downs. That's a pretty big theme, isn't it? And his time at Marshall University. And finally, Broke. You had like a dozen plus athletes, even more than that probably, detailing how easily you could squander millions and how superstar athletes often can't keep their money until it's absolutely gone. You know, those 13 that I just listed quickly right there, they could have made this list, and I think that would have been just fine when it comes to what 30 for 30 has to offer. But they just missed my cut. Are there any others I'm missing? Be sure to let me know via social media. We hope you enjoyed this episode in which we ranked our favorite 13 episodes of ESPN's 30 for 30 series. We'd also like to bring your attention to an episode in our archive, very similar to this one. You can find it in iTunes, the podcast app, or scroll down on our Podomatic page. It was a quick hit episode entitled 13 for 30, in which 13 college basketball stories and ideas were proposed for the 30 for 30 series to tackle. Ideas for 30 for 30 episodes, which included the story of Lamar Odom at Rhode Island, Jimmer Fredette at BYU, the infamous Baylor scandal surrounding the death of Patrick Dennehy and attempted cover-up by head coach Dave Bliss, a follow-up to the 1994 award-winning documentary Hoop Dreams, Bob Knight and Neil Reed's legacies after the choking scandal during practice at Indiana University, and two of my favorites, chronicling the meteoric rises of both George Mason and VCU out of the little-known CAA conference as they respectively marched to the Final Fours in 2006 and 2011. It's a quick listen and some ideas that we had for the producers at ESPN's 30 for 30 that I think you might enjoy. Plus, on our Tumblr page, we created 30 for 30 promo posters for each proposed episode. The link for our Tumblr page is in the description and info for this episode. I also decided to post the actual 13 posters that went for our 13 favorite episodes. It's something worth comparing. You know, I'm not Mr. Graphics, I'm not Mr. Media Design, but I think I did a pretty good job. Subscribing to the show, look, it's easier than ever. iTunes, podcast app, a bookmark. That's how you can check out episodes like our 13 for 30 for college basketball, which dropped during March Madness. And I'm going to tell you right now, there's a college football episode ready to go this fall with a similar 13 for 30 format. No need for secrets. The rough draft, it's already almost done. As for today's episode, I can't thank you enough for listening and continuing with us through our very diverse, but also very entertaining, third season. Last week, we really stepped outside of the box as Skylar Van Valkenburg, he made his debut on the show with his segments, Elephants Always Remember, and Chachi V, our political correspondent, the king of Donkey Punch, he came on and they both discussed, not debated, politics as the race for the White House continues with the close of the primaries and the presidency in our current mirror. It was a unique and interesting look that gave us some rare political speak on this show, and I, for one, enjoyed it thoroughly. The hits were great, and it seems like the audience responded. We're going to still continue our reviews of this season of MTV's The Challenge Rivals 3 with our series that drops around every weekend, Rise to the Challenge. We're three episodes in, just as Rivals 3 is, and we have plenty more to go. In fact, you can expect episode 4 Friday or Saturday this weekend. Whether it's sports, pop culture, or politics, trust me when I say we got you covered. You keep listening and supporting us, and we'll keep producing. It's that simple. We'll be back next week to break down the NBA as it stands, as we march towards the NBA Finals with a former guest and show favorite for many of you. He was on one of our first episodes. That's right. Dwight Watson will be back in the house. It's time to check back in with Dwight, and more importantly, it's time to look at this historic NBA season as it starts to wind down. Who knows? Maybe a 30 for 30 will come from this season too. But until then, you know, it's on to the next one.
It's easy to sum it up when you just talk about practice. We sitting here, I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice. I mean, listen, we're talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice. Not the game that I go out there and die for and play every game like it's my last. Not the game. We're talking about practice, man. I mean, how silly is that, man? We're talking about practice. I know I'm supposed to be there. I know I'm supposed to lead by example. I know that. And I'm not shoving it aside, you know, like it don't mean anything. I know it's important. I do. I honestly do. But we're talking about practice, man. What are we talking about? Practice? We're talking about practice, man. We're talking about practice. We ain't talking about the game. We're talking about practice, man. When you come in the arena and you see me play, don't you?
Absolutely.
You see me give everything I got, right?
Absolutely.
But we're talking about practice right now.
But it's an issue that you're coaching.
We're talking about practice. Man, I hear you. It's funny to me, too. I mean, it's strange to me, too. But we're talking about practice, man. We're not even talking about the game, the actual game, when it matters. We're talking about practice.
Alan, is it possible, though, that from where he's coming from...